Someone's having a party for the top 10, the senior class snobs. Before they get to celebrate, six of them will die in the most bizarre ways you'll ever see.
Virginia, don't go away. Come over here, Virginia.
It is up to you to determine whether you wish to subject yourself to fear, terror, and shock. Because of the bizarre nature of this birthday party, pray you are not invited.
Welcome back to Cult Radio Agogo Live. This is Tiffany Dufo, and we're getting ready to call Melissa Sue Anderson. You may remember her, depending on when you grew up, either as Mary Ingalls from Little House on the Prairie or Ginny from the horror film Happy Birthday to Me. Of course, we're talking to Melissa tonight in celebration of the re-release of Happy Birthday to Me that's coming out on Anchor Bay Films October 13th. And for all of you listening, stay tuned, because a little bit later during the show, we actually have a couple of DVD copies of the brand new release to give away to our Cult Radio Live listeners. And if you're not lucky enough to win one of the DVDs later on tonight, don't forget that it's hitting streets, quote-unquote, from Anchor Bay as of October 13th. And this is the first time that it's been on a new release DVD since the 80s. So you'll want to make sure to check that out. We're going to talk to Melissa right now. She's standing by. And we're going to find out just what she thinks about being involved with Little House and Happy Birthday to Me. Man, what a contrast. Of course, you know, Terry Dufo growing up had a huge crush on Melissa Sue Anderson. So I think he's hiding somewhere, and I think I might have to handle this one myself. He said, please don't tell her I had a crush on her, so that's probably the first thing I'll tell her. So let's go ahead and give her a call right now.
Hello.
Hi, is this Melissa Sue Anderson?
Yes, speaking.
Hi, Melissa. This is Tiffany with Cult Radio Live. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Tiffany?
I'm really good. First thing I wanted to ask you is probably an odd question to start with, but you officially dropped the Sue in Melissa Sue Anderson a couple of years ago. So why did you drop it? And let me ask you this. Why did you ever go by your full name? Was it maybe to distinguish because there was two Melissas on Little House?
Actually, I dropped it many years ago, actually. But, no, the reason I used it, when I entered the business when I was about nine, there was another Melissa. I went by Melissa Anderson. I believe that my first, all the commercials I did, and then my first two speaking roles, real speaking roles, you know, in series, The Brady Bunch and Shaft, mm-hmm. I was billed as Melissa Anderson. But I had to put the Sue in somewhere right in that period of time, right before Little House, because there was another Melissa Anderson in Screen Actors Guild. She didn't work, I guess, but she kept up her dues.
Right.
So she was a paying member. And so I had to, you know, she had the name first. So I had to put the Sue in. And I never liked it. I mean, that is my actual name.
Mm-hmm.
But I never really liked it because I was always thought of my whole life. I was either, you know, people either thought I was Southern or very, you know, Melissa Sue all the time, you know.
Right.
Or which is, there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, that's not true in my case. Or very young. You know, it sounds very young. Melissa Sue, Melissa Sue. So. No, I was able to get my name back. Gosh, I guess it was quite a while ago now. I mean, I think I was finally, you know, I was in my mid-20s or something, and I got my name back.
Well, you mentioned, you know, Melissa Sue, everyone always thought that you were from the West or whatever, but you're actually a native of California from Berkeley, right?
Yes.
And how did you end up, I mean, you mentioned that you got into acting at the ripe age of 9. So how did you end up getting involved in it? Was it something that you kind of said, hey, I want to go do that, or was it just kind of something you fell into?
I really sort of fell into it. Kind of a long story, but I had very bad asthma as a kid, and at that time they only knew about the exterior sort of allergies, like pollen and weeds and grass and this and that and on and on and on it went, and you know, and things like dust and regular old house dust and all kinds of things. They hadn't gotten to the foods yet. That was a whole nother issue. But anyway, so I had all these allergies, and my doctor at the time thought that that developing the lungs more so was a really good way of maybe combating the allergy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was told to do as many extracurricular things that I could do.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, I danced and I ice skated and I swam and I, all kinds of, but I was, I took ice skating lessons and I was on a swim team and I took dancing lessons, all different kinds of dance. And anyway, one of my dance teachers, his name was Louis Dupron, and he had been hired by Paramount in the 1930s to be their big dancing star, like Gene Kelly and Donald O'Connor.
Uh-huh.
And he had actually taught, at one point, Gene Kelly, at different times. And, but the problem with him was that he was very shy, very introverted. And he had fantastic footwork, but he didn't have the personality to go with it. And he didn't have also the acting chops. He had never, worked as an actor. So he thought I had all this potential as a dancer. I was a good dancer, but he thought I should have, get some acting experience so that I would be a more well-rounded person.
Right.
So it went on like that. I overheard these conversations to my parents and stuff over the period of time, and finally, it started to sink in what he was actually saying, and I thought that sounded kind of neat. So I went to a children's agent, and I had a meeting, and my parents thought, I was very shy. And my parents thought, this will be fine because it'll never go any further. She won't get an agent. But I did. I ended up getting the agent, and then it was, she won't like to go on the interviews after school because it'll take her time away from playing basketball or whatever and with her friends, and that wasn't so bad either, and then it was, there's so much competition, you won't get a job. That was tricky because there is a lot of competition, and yes, you do go on a lot of interviews, and no, you don't get a lot of the jobs, percentage wise.
Mm-hmm.
but I did. I mean, I worked. I didn't do a lot of commercials. There other kids did a lot more than I did, but I did like 9 or 10 of them, and then the part started. Anyway, and I really liked it. So ultimately it kind of snowballed, and they had to sort of readjust how they were going to deal with it because I really liked it, and it was kind of, for a really shy kid, it was kind of my, a way of getting out of myself a little,
Right.
And so they realized they really didn't want to take it away from me. So that's kind of how it happened.
Wow, I bet pretty surprising for your parents who thought, it won't turn into anything, and then you ended up growing up on television.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and, the only one in the family, so it was, I'm sure it was kind of shocking, yeah.
Now, a couple of your very first acting roles were parts on Bewitched, and of course the infamous part on The Brady Bunch, where you kissed Bobby Brady. Now, the Brady Bunch was a huge hit at the time. So what was it like being on set with them? Do you remember anything from the cast? What was the environment like?
I do. Well, I think I was 10 years old, and I was so excited. I mean, I was beside myself. I was so excited. The only thing I was worried about was, doing this kissing, because
right.
I obviously wasn't that into that.
Right.
So I was a little worried about that, but I was so excited to... I watched the Brady Bunch every week,
mm-hmm.
I mean, every Friday night I was there, so I was just beside myself. And I remember I went, and I, as I'm seeing them all, and I'm seeing the set and everything, and one by one they sort of straggle in, and I kind of see, Jan or, whoever it was, but they were all so much older than I was. I was shocked. I had no idea they were older or that much older than I was. And even Susan Olsen, who played Cindy, I mean, she wasn't my age. She was older than I was. I don't know what, I think when you identify so much with a show, you just, you kind of think that they're all, they're much closer to you than they really are, you know?
Right.
So I just thought, oh, they're older than I am. but Mike Lukenland, who played Bobby, you know, he was fantastic, and I worked with him, you know, all the time. And we had a great time. And then, you know, he went on to do a Little House episode. So that was really fun, you know, to talk about sort of fun that I guest starred on his show and then he guest starred on our show.
Right, right.
So that's kind of fun when the business works like that. And it was really as exciting for me, you know. It was like being, it's cool when you're a fan of the show and then you actually get a job on it. It is very exciting.
Absolutely. Now, yeah. Of course, then you did Little House on the Prairie, Mary Ingalls, from 74 to 81, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of step me through the process of how you got involved with that. I mean, I know you probably went and just read for it, but was there any clue at the time that this was going to blow up and be such a huge show?
Well, no. I mean, and in the beginning, I didn't even know. I'm actually writing this book now about the show, actually, about more about the behind-the-scenes, you know, how the show was actually made and what, you know, my perception of the way I grew up kind of book. Anyway, I wrote that part, you know, about the audition process. First, it was this big meeting at NBC, and supposedly there were 200 girls, or approximately that, for each role, Mary and Laura, in the very beginning. But what was funny was I didn't know. I just thought it was a Western.
Right.
I had no idea what it actually was. And then I found out in that meeting what it was. And there again, I was excited because I'd read, of course, like every kid, I had read those books, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very excited, and then they narrowed it down from that, and we went and read for Mike Landon, and then they narrowed it down again, and we did screen tests mm-hmm. for each of the roles, and I had no idea, I don't think I ever allowed myself to think that it would go beyond the movie that I was auditioning for, and then got. We did the pilot as this 2-hour movie, and I, you know, you obviously would hope that it would sell and go to series, but you never would want to think that it would, because then you're bound to be disappointed.
Right.
And then even when it did, year to year, you can't imagine that it's, I don't know, that it's, you don't really think that it's getting as big as it was. You know, you're so kind of involved in doing it and working on it that you don't really see it that way.
Right.
I'm sure, you know, maybe that's the way it was on the Brady Bunch too. I mean, after a while you do.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes a while. It's a couple years before you, or at least a year before you really start to see, ooh, wow, this is, you know, this is having much more of an impact than I ever dreamed, you know.
Right, right. What was it like? Tell me about some of your co-stars, because obviously Little House had a great ensemble cast, working with people like Melissa Gilbert, Michael Landon. What was it like? Because there was a lot of kids on the show. Did you guys all get along? Was it like a big happy family? Was there any kind of like, you know, TV sibling rivalry?
Well, I think that everyone wanted there to be, you know, in those days, sort of like now. The tabloids, you know, would write vicious rumors and, you know, print things that weren't true. You know, they always wanted Melissa Gilbert and I to be, you know, at each other's throats. And I remember I have something in a box somewhere that says, was something about me being seen with, or being out on, yeah, something like being out on the town with Mike Landon. I mean, it's obviously not true.
Right.
I mean, completely not true when I was an adult, you know, older or whatever. But I mean, you know, that they probably, I don't know, maybe it was a mistake. It was, you know, the girl who became his wife. I don't know. But I mean, they were always looking for stuff like that, ammunition. But basically, I think we were all pretty smart about it. We were all very, very different. You throw people together from completely different backgrounds. And none of us were that close. You know, we kind of kept a little bit of a distance, which I think was smart, because that way you couldn't, especially the kids. You know, if you get too close, it would be like being at school with kids day in and day out.
Right.
And even longer hours and tighter, closer relationships. There's bound to be huge arguments, and that's the way life really works, you know. So I think having a little more of a distance was better because it stopped that kind of thing from happening, and it kept us more on a professional. After all, we were working. We weren't there to have fun.
Right.
I mean, we did have fun, but it was smarter, I think, that we all were a little more reserved about it.
Right. Now, with playing Mary Ingalls, I was actually, because the show is in syndication and has been on, basically has not stopped being on since it debuted, because now it's in reruns on Hallmark and other channels. And I was just rewatching the other day the episode where Michael Landon tells you or your characters that you're going to be going blind because of the scarlet fever, and it's this great emotional dramatic scene.
Right.
How did you pull the emotions for not only that scene, but learn to play blind so well? Because there was a lot of fans of the show that had maybe started watching it in later years that had even said that they believed for the longest time that the actress who played Mary Ingalls was really blind.
Right. I got letters like that. I also got letters that where people said how nice of the writers to write in that you had gone blind. They thought I'd actually gone blind, and they wrote it into the story. I mean, it was a huge compliment. I mean, people were very complimentary about, you know, my performance and everything, and it was great. And also blind people who watched the show, and they, you know, I talked to them, and they wrote in, and that they watched the show with, you know, their relatives and friends and stuff, and that they thought I, you know, had done a great job too, as you know. So that it was really, really you know, it made me feel terrific. I worked really hard. I researched, and I went to the Foundation for the Junior Blind, and then they had a not an instructor, well, she might have actually been a teacher there, anyway, who came on the set and helped me whenever a technical question would come up, so that we had someone right there to answer it. It was a really, especially those two episodes, the first one where he tells me, and then the second one where I am blind and I have to learn to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Were, you know, very emotional
right.
episodes, it took a lot, it took a lot of concentration on my part. Because I wanted it to be believable, and it was difficult. It's funny when there's like every now and then you hear about an actor blowing up at somebody because some crew member crossed their eye line while they were emoting, and I think, gosh, I mean, all the I could do my blind gaze, my that weird stare thing, and anything could happen in front of me, and it wouldn't matter,
right?
Because I was into it. I was concentrating, and I was, doing my thing. And then you think about these actors, they're playing people who can see, for God's sake, and they're making this huge deal, But anyway, no, I took it seriously, and I'm glad it paid off, and I'm glad, I was able to do a good job. But it was really funny because I would go off onto some other show like The Love Boat or something on our hiatus, and especially, I think it was actually a Love Boat, was like the first other thing I had done since going blind. And the first rehearsal, I was doing it. I was like, what am I doing? Luckily, nobody noticed. I was like, oh, my God, what am I doing? Because I was so used to it,
Right.
I've been doing it day in and day out for months,
Right.
But, yeah.
Well, you obviously did something right, Melissa, because you were the only actor on Little House to receive an Emmy nomination. So congratulations on that. You are obviously doing something right.
Thanks.
I wanted to ask you, though, because even you yourself earlier described yourself as being very shy, and a lot of people likened you to your character because they said you were very mild-mannered. So there was a huge thing during Little House because you were in all the teeny magazines. You had become kind of like a pop teen icon. All the boys had a crush on Mary. How did you feel about that? How was that like dealing with it? It had to be kind of surreal.
Well, to me it was just impossible to take it seriously. I mean, I couldn't even think about it. I would probably turn red. I mean, I'm sure I did. I mean, it was just too you know, I couldn't even think about it. You know, looking back, of course, and even at the time, it was flattering. I mean, I would have said that at the time, but it was also, you know, it was too much attention and too much of the wrong kind of attention, and it was too embarrassing all the way around. But if you say any of those things, it always comes off the wrong way, you know.
Right.
I was grateful, obviously, and I was, you know, it's you know, I was happy, but it was very, you know, for a teenager at that time anyway, you know, going through that kind of thing just makes you feel like, you know, you want to disappear, you know.
Right.
But you know, yeah, and having it to look back on is very funny, you know, and very sweet, you know.
Would you have changed anything? I believe I had read another interview with you online where you had mentioned that one of the reasons why you kind of got out of acting for a while was to become a mom and, you know, didn't really encourage your kids to be in the business. Do you feel like you missed anything because of basically growing up on TV?
Well, you know, because I did, it's the only thing I knew, you mm-hmm. know. I mean, and I had a fine experience. I didn't have any terrible things happen to me. You know, I didn't end up doing drugs and, you know, ending up in, you know, finding myself in places that I didn't want to be. And, you know, it wasn't like that. But as far as my kids, yeah, the reason I did retire really for a while and I only worked occasionally for friends that might ask or something, it was really because I wanted my kids to be the center of, you know, my universe, or, you know, I wanted the attention to be on them, because I think that's the way it should be when you're a kid. It's the only time in your life that you really deserve, you know, you really can ask for attention and need attention and deserve and be the center of attention and not be obnoxious, you
right.
know, because you're a kid, you know.
Right.
And I think every kid deserves that, you know. And if I'm like, you know, Mike Landon walking around with his kids, he gets all the, you know, got all the attention, you know, and I didn't want to be like that because you feel like the kids are really second all the time,
mm-hmm.
second or third, or, you know, they may have a great lifestyle, but they're not having a great life with their parents, you know,
right.
And especially these days with the paparazzi the way it is now. I mean, awful.
Oh, I know.
So that was really the motivation at that time. And then as far as, you know, not encouraging them, I would discourage them. I would never want them to be child actors. I wanted them to have, you know, really normal childhoods, and I wanted them also to grow up and go, you know, and go to college and become, you know, get some really steady job, because you always want what you didn't have. I mean, you know, I had a great experience and I've been lucky. I mean, incredibly lucky. But, you know, and it's wonderful, and from a creative standpoint, it's fantastic. But to tell your kids, oh, sure, you know, go off and dream, be a dreamer like me, or like, you know, like most of us are, you know, that we, you know, we envision our future to be this, and luckily it happened, or whatever, you know. You can't really be a responsible parent that way. You have to say you need an education, you need something to fall back on, you need, you know, you need to do that if you want to be an artist, do it, you know, as a hobby, or,
right.
you know. Have something more stable, because you want your kids to always be okay and never have to worry about big ups and big downs, or the one, you know, the worry and the waiting and the wearing your heart on your sleeve and having, you know, and having somebody, you know, dash your hopes when you're young. And, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that you obviously as a parent don't want your kids to have to go through.
Right.
Even though I had a good experience.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this. I mean, a lot, of course, the myth of child actors is infamous. There's been, unfortunately, so many child actors that have gotten into drugs and being in the wrong kind of scene and the wrong environment. And you, of course, never went through any of that. Do you feel that maybe part of that was contributed to being involved with something like Little House that was such a family show and being around people like Michael Landon?
Well, yes, I'm sure it certainly helped, because, yeah, you know, they weren't perfect by any means. I mean, you know, Mike Landon now, you know, people knew he had affairs and he, you know, he wasn't exactly the family man that everyone thought he was, but basically, he was a great guy, and he did, you know, he did great things for the people who worked for him. He helped out his crew members. That's why this, you know, his crew that he, you know, he'd worked with these people since Bonanza. I mean, he kept them on. He, you know, he did all kinds of things above and beyond what any executive producer does. I mean, he really was a great guy. But obviously, you know, flawed like anyone else. And I'm sure, though, that atmosphere, I mean, they really ran a tight ship. I mean, they wouldn't put up with anybody who, you know, even attitudes, you know, people who came in and thought they were, you know, some hot stuff because they were the latest, greatest actor, you know, whatever, guest star that comes in. I mean, they wouldn't hire them again, or they wouldn't, you know, they'd knock them down a few pegs because, you know, that's not the kind of attitude that our show, you know, that's not the way we worked, you know. So it was a healthy atmosphere in that respect, too, because, you know, I and nobody else was really, we weren't allowed to think more of ourselves than we should, you know. Well,
that's actually refreshing to hear. Let me ask you, maybe that's kind of where the idea had come from, because it had been rumored that Landon at times would be hard to work with, but maybe it was just that he was keeping everyone grounded.
Well, I think you know, he was. He had his moments. He was hard to work with at times because he was a total, absolute control freak.
Mm-hmm.
And that came from, he was, you know, like many, many actors, you know, very insecure. He grew up in a, you know, and had a kind of a miserable childhood. and he, you know, he was this little boy, you know, inside this phenomenally huge star actor, you know. At that time, I mean, Michael Landon was gigantic, you mm-hmm. know, in like in the 70s, you know, he was huge. And he still was, though, this insecure guy, you know, and he covered it, you know, but sometimes he went too far. Sometimes he was really, he could be obnoxious. He could be, he was so controlling. He felt the need to, you know, to be that way, that sometimes he was obnoxious, but most of the time he was great. I mean, you know, like I said, you know, everybody has their, you know, it wasn't perfect, but he was great most of the time. I mean, and his bad was, you know, a lot of other people's, you know, kind of every day.
Right.
So it really, you know, it was nothing compared to what a lot of people are.
Right. Any truth to the fact that he or other actors on the set were a bit of a prankster?
Oh, yeah, he was. he definitely was. And you know who else was, or he certainly had an offbeat, weird sense of humor, was Linwood Boomer, who played my, even his name. It always makes me smile. He played my husband, you know, mm-hmm. Adam, and he was bizarre. I mean, you know, the two of them should have. Too bad they didn't actually work more together, because they would have really had fun, because they were both zany, you know, kind of, you know, childlike and just goofy, you know, really. And Linwood, you know, went on to do Night Court.
Right.
And Malcolm in the Middle, and, you know, and so you can kind of see his sense of humor.
Right.
He was just bizarre, you know. He's a funny, funny guy, and Michael was, you know, yeah. He would do all kinds of things. He'd pop a little like baby frog, whatever you call them. What do you call a baby frog?
A tadpole.
Yeah.
Kind of.
In his mouth and for little kids and open it up and, you know, it would jump out and, you know, you know, he'd do all kinds of really disgusting, weird stuff, you know. But, and then there were a lot of other things I can't, you know, right now think of anything. But, yes, he was definitely, you know, a prankster.
Well, let me, and I'm sure that, and I want you to tell us more about your book, because I'm sure a lot of the stuff you're going to be talking about in the book that you're working on, but let me ask you about later on when you worked with Michael again, because I understand that he actually asked you to associate produce his last project, Where Pigeons Go to Die.
Right. Well, the story behind that is that my husband, Michael Sloan, And I have had, he passed away, unfortunately, a friend, Bill Campbell, who wrote this book called Where Pigeons Go to Die. Mm-hmm. And one night when we were out, we every now and then would socialize with Mike Landon and Cindy, his wife, who was my stand-in. That was the big thing about the affair and all that. It was anyway, yeah, and a little awkward for me, but never mind.
Well, see, now it makes sense, though, Melissa.
But, So we would socialize occasionally, and one night we were out and we pitched him, you know, the idea of that book, and gave him the book, and you know, we were right. We knew it was totally his kind of material. You know, we just knew that, and he loved it. So he went on to you know, to do it, and yeah, and I got to associate produce, and I was, you know, it was great, because it was great for Bob Campbell. I hope I didn't say Bill. It's Bob Campbell. And it was great for Mike Landon. So I was happy that I was, you know, that worked out, that my husband and I were able to do that.
Right. Now, of course, you went on to do many other things in addition to Little House, and you actually won an Emmy for an ABC After School special. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. That was for Which Mother Is Mine?
And how did you end up? I mean, was it just kind of like just going and auditioning, and you just happened to get it? I mean, they don't really do TV movies anymore, after school specials.
No, they don't. No, I don't think I auditioned for that. I don't remember. I think by that time I didn't have to for that one. I did another one before that, and I may have had to audition for that one. That's definitely possible. I don't think I had to for this one, because by that time I had so much screen time, people kind of knew, you know, my work.
Mm-hmm.
They were seeing me every week, so I don't think they made me audition for that. But that was produced by both of them that I had done were produced by this producer named Martin Tosse, and he was just lovely. He was this quiet, mild, really creative guy, and really, really, really nice. And yeah, he won all kinds of awards too. I don't happen to know the names of these awards now that it, I don't have them in front of me, but it won lots of awards, and it was, very well respected, this show. And it's too bad they don't do them anymore, because when they're done well, they're really, and they, you know, they were totally family friendly,
mm-hmm.
but they tackled some really interesting topics, especially even for that time.
Right.
And, yeah, it was a pleasure to do and to be associated with, and then to find out that I'd won this Emmy was great.
Wow. Well, so you had done Little House, you had done after school's TV specials, and you were kind of the girl next door, and then you went on and did a horror film, Happy
right.
Birthday to Me, and that was, for me, I mean, that just kind of seemed like completely opposite of what you had done up to that point. Was there any trepidation about taking on something that was so different from all of your other on-camera personas?
Well, not really, because as an actress, you know, it's exactly what you want to do. You want to, like, mix it up and do all kinds of things. But I'd also done on, you know, I was pretty busy during, and lucky, but during every hiatus, every year of Little House, I was also doing TV movies, like, for CBS and ABC. And one of them was called Midnight Offerings, and that's where I played a modern day witch,
mm-hmm.
and I did all these, you know, incantations and had to learn all this dialogue phonetically because it was also creepy and weird, and you know, that was really funny, because I was doing that at the same time as I was doing Little House, so so I was back and forth, some of it overlapped, so that was really interesting, But so doing Happy Birthday was it was great for me. I was as an actress completely excited, and I really, really wanted it to work out. I was so glad the scheduling did work out where I could they could make sure that I was kind of available, because they had to do a little bit of scheduling, but at that time I had been blind for a while, so there wasn't as much, I wasn't in as many episodes, so they only had to do it a little on the front end and the back, and kind of made the room in the middle, so it was okay.
Right.
But yeah, I it was the only thing I didn't like about it was that about halfway through the movie, J. Lee Thompson, who directed, and he directed this big movie, The Guns of Navarone, I guess, was a huge movie that he had done years ago. And anyway, he was a wonderful English guy, and about halfway through, he said that they were going to change the ending. And I wish they hadn't done that, because originally I was supposed to be the murderess. And then, and that made it even more fun, you know, for me. But then they changed the ending and it became, you know, then you kind of really didn't buy it, you know. It was it's still a cult classic movie. Like a lot of people really, a lot of people have seen Happy Birthday. Even my daughter's friends and stuff. It's like so weird. But, you know, and it's still fun. It's still, you know, it's still got great, scary, really scary moments. And it's great, you know. But I wish they had just kept it the way it was. And it would have been, for me, you know, as an actress, I wanted to be the bad guy.
Right.
You know, I really wanted to be the bad guy. So, yeah. So
did they ever film the original ending?
No, they didn't. I wish they had, but no, they didn't.
They
changed it on the spot, and I just wish they hadn't. You know?
See, too bad, because now with the age of DVDs, we could have hoped to have seen that as an extra somewhere.
It would have been, yeah, it would have been great. It would have really been great. Well, it's funny, too, because I saw Quentin Tarantino interviewed not long ago because of, you know, his big movie out now.
Mm-hmm.
And something came up, I don't know how it came up, but something came up about the slasher movies of the 80s, and I was like, oh, I wonder if he saw Happy Birthday. Please, please, I hope you saw Happy Birthday. Hire me for something. Because, you know, he's great about bringing actors back and stuff.
Right.
And you know, oh, you can take me.
Well, Quentin,
yeah.
If you're out there.
Really, if you're listening.
So would that mean that if somebody came to you and is ready to put you in as a starring role in another horror film, are you ready to do it?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Yeah, no, but you know, the great thing about acting and, you know, being in the business for a long time is you can kind of come and go, whether, you know, you want to or you're just sort of forced into it, whatever, but you can always come back. You know, I left as an ingenue, you know, I'd end up coming back as a mother now. I mean, hopefully it won't be as a grandmother, but, you know, if I wait much longer. No, but, you know, you can always work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You may not work as much as you want or whatever, but you can always work. So,
right.
So it would be nice. Obviously, it'd be nice to, you know, I'm always open to it. I'm not, you know, I have a lot of other things on my plate, so I'm not, you know, actively running to meetings and stuff, but, you know, sure, I'm definitely always open to it.
Well, let me ask you this. I wanted to get your reaction on the re-release of Happy Birthday to Me, because Anchor Bay is re-releasing it in an anniversary edition. It's coming out on October 13th. And it was actually kind of funny because we work really closely with Anchor Bay and promote a lot of their releases. And when they had sent us the press release, we had said, wow, it'd be really great if we could get Melissa on the show to do an interview. And we'd asked the publicist, we said, can you get a hold of her? And, you know, because a lot of times they're in contact with the talent from the films.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I have no clue how to find her. I don't know where she is. We've tried finding her. I don't even know where to start looking. So then we did a little bit of research and was able to get a hold of your husband, Michael Sloan, and in turn get a hold of you. And when I told the publicist from Anchor Bay, he was like, wow, if you ever stop doing the radio show, you guys could be investigators. So what do you think about this film kind of being reborn? I mean, it already has a cult status, and now it's coming back out on DVD.
Well, I'm... I don't know. I mean, it was, I have to say, you know, those tense moments and stuff in the film, they really did the great build up, you know. It's funny because when I did it, I never saw horror movies. Like, I never really watched them because they always scared me, you know. I mean, I never really was a horror movie person because I always was like, you know. Oh. And so I wasn't really, and now even if I go to a movie, I cover my eyes and peek so that I don't, like, you know, I'm afraid of, like, screaming and scaring somebody or making people, like, laugh hysterically or embarrassing myself.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not a good horror movie watcher, but I was happy as an actress, obviously, to do it. But you know, it did have, and now it's really fun for me, you know, it was really fun for me to watch it. It's not like I watch it a lot. I haven't watched it in years, but, but it is really fun. I'm amazed, you know, that it's got this, like, I'm thrilled. I mean, it's a great thing. And I have to say, you know, for your daughter and your daughter's friends to like it, you know, and you know, I didn't force it down her throat or anything, you know, she just, you know, they just watched it and they, you know, they like it. So, I guess there's, you know, there's an audience for it, and I'm really happy for that. I think it was very well done. And you know, it with that other ending, it's interesting. I'll say that it's kind of, you know, leaves you wondering. That's for sure.
Right.
You know, it's intriguing, and it was a lot of fun to do. And and it's funny that it was, you know, it was shot in Montreal, and that's where I live now. So, I think it's great that it's being re-released. It's very, you know, fun.
Well, let me ask you this, because what was it like? I mean, I know you had mentioned that this was, you know, you were kind of new to acting in horror films and you hadn't really watched them a lot. Of which, by the way, Melissa, coming from someone who can't get scared at horror films anymore because I've seen so many of them, you're a perfect horror film watcher if you're squeamy. That's great.
I am, yeah. Even having done one now, I'm still not. Even knowing about the blood and the what, you know, I mean, I'm the perfect audience for that.
Well, what was it like doing the film with some of the special effects? Can you give us any insight as to how they were done or some of the things that you learned, or was there any effects that went wrong or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had this, I wish I could think of their names right now, but we had this, great team of people that did the special effects makeup, the masks that they had to do, you know, for all the characters, and they were famous at that time. They had done some really, I think they'd won an Oscar or something for some other movie that they'd done, but the process, I mean, was horrible. The stuff that they put you in, the latex whatever stuff, or to make the latex mold. Was the stuff that got, even though they put things in your hair and everything to stop it from sticking, it still stuck.
Right.
And it pulled out, so much hair around my face. And maybe it's better now. Probably it is. They've probably come farther with it all.
Well, now they can do it all by computers. So.
That's true. They can do, take all the pain out of it. But, that could be very painful. But then, you know, and all the things they did with the blood, you know, that it's sugar water, and so then if you're shooting in a, you know, which we did, of course, and a lot of horror movies do, cemeteries at night, I mean, with blood around that's sugar water, I mean, you're going to have like 5 gazillion mosquitoes, and we did. I was even wearing stockings, and I counted them once. I had like 67 bites from my knees down to my ankles. From being in the cemetery, shooting all these scenes in the cemetery at night and the mosquitoes. But, the makeup they did was fantastic, but it could be very, very painful.
Yeah. Well, obviously the makeup was so good, because they ended up having a problem. And I don't know if you were aware of this or involved with, you know, them talking to the cast about this at all, but when the film went to the MPAA to get rated, it kept getting an X rating. Is that right?
I did hear that. I'd kind of forgotten about that, and it was what all the gore and the. That's right. It was bloody, and it was so violent at times.
Mm-hmm.
The shish kebab. I mean, people. People tell me, I did hear that. I'd forgotten all about that, but I had heard that. And I was like, oh my God, it can't be an X. I cannot be, NBC is going to like fire me.
I
can't be in an X-rated movie. I'm going to be sued or something. There's a morals clause, I'm sure.
Well, let me ask you this. For that era, in the 80s, when they were doing, you know, horror films and slasher films, as they were called, it was very typical to have nudity and sexual content all the way throughout the film. And the one thing that was interesting about Happy Birthday is that there was none of that. I mean, there was a quick glimpse when you were in, like, you know, your underwear or whatever, but there was no nudity. There was no really strong sexual content. Was that something that was originally in the script and was taken out at anybody's request, or
it wasn't in the version that I read?
Okay.
So if it, yeah, so if it had been there, you know, before they gave it to me, they cleaned it up. I don't know. No, it wasn't in my version, so that never was an issue. So that was good.
I take it, would you have done it if there had been any nudity in it?
If it had been, I would have had trouble because I wouldn't be particularly comfortable with it anyway, but at that time, still being on Little House, too, I would have had a problem.
Right.
And, you know, like, I was offered the Blue Lagoon, mm-hmm. when that was, you know, a few years earlier, and, you know, I turned that down. But the stuff, you know, I wouldn't have been comfortable with it either if it had been, you know, it just depends on how much, you know, if they could cut it or do it in a way where it where you think you've seen something where you really haven't, that's one thing.
Right.
But just gratuitously, I would have been uncomfortable too.
Right. Well, I wanted to, of course, take a moment to wish you a happy birthday because your birthday is coming up soon, right?
Yeah, it is. Thank you.
So all of the listeners really hope that you get what you want for your birthday because we know what happens when you don't. So
that's right.
And at the same time, I wanted to let you know, I'm 26 years old. My dad actually co-hosts the live show with me. Right now he's hiding in the other room because he grew up having a crush on you. He was too shy to talk to you, but he recently just had a birthday too, so I promised him that I would get Melissa Anderson to tell him happy birthday on the air.
Oh, and what's your dad's name?
His name's Terry.
Terry. Oh, well, happy belated birthday, Terry, and thanks. Really, thank you for being a fan. And if you're embarrassed or you're feeling shy now, I mean, now you would know how I would have felt then. So we're sort of even, and I, you know, I, but I'm, you know, very flattered and happy that we have, near birthdays.
Right. Well, before we go, I want you to, is there anything else that you can tell us about this book that you're working on? When do you expect to maybe give when can we have a hint so we can look for it?
Well, I believe it'll be next summer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it will be because I'm kind of having to, you know, I've got some deadlines to meet here. What I'm happy about is that it's going to be very much about what it's like to be a kid growing up in, you know, in the manner that I grew up. So it's not about, you know, so much who I dated and where I, you know, that kind of stuff. It's really more about the work and more about how things are done and the funny things that happen and other. It's also about not just Little House, but it's also about other shows that I did at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot about Little House, and it's about, you know, the relationships that we had and how we went to school and how all kinds of things that a lot of people don't know, but I think they'll be interested in learning about. And I'm hoping, at least at this point, it's slightly humorous. So I'm hoping that it will stay that way. And what I'm happy about so far is that you really get a sense of me. It's really the way I talk. So I think the reader will kind of enjoy that and get into the groove of that and what it's like to be a kid in the 70s growing up and on that show and doing the work, you know.
Very cool. And any idea of, I don't know if you've found a publisher yet, do you have a publisher for the book to where people can maybe check their website to find out when it's coming out, or?
Yes, I do. Globe Pequot. Yes, it's Globe, Globe, and then Pequot.
Fantastic. Well, now everyone knows, so they can keep an eye out for the book. Definitely
right.
Looking forward to that, Melissa. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show. And keep us updated. And when the book comes out, maybe we can either have you back on again, or we can at least do an update
fantastic.
On the show and let everyone know about it.
Well, thanks so much, Tiffany. I really appreciate it, and you've been really a pleasure to talk to.
Well, thank you. I'm going to ask you, Melissa, to go ahead and stay on the line with me.
Okay.
For all of our listeners, we're going to go ahead and go to a musical break. Stay tuned. More Cult Radio Live coming up right after this.
Rita, the M theme from Happy Birthday to Me.